Hey, everybody. Jason back again. Here we go. Part two, talk about persuasion with Dr. Michelle Welliver from Susquehanna University. Dr. Michelle, are you ready to go? You ready to talk about persuasion and sales processes?
I am ready.
All right. For people who are tuning into this one, make sure to check out part one. Also, you can check out more details in the show notes for Dr. Michelle's bio. She is the Associate Professor of Communications at Susquehanna University. She teaches advertising, public relations, professional selling. She developed the interdisciplinary professional selling minor. She's the sales program coordinator. She works in the high school selling program. She came from a background of selling in radio and TV advertising, even with a bachelor's in marketing and working on an MBA where sales was a stopgap at the time. And look at her now. So great conversation, part one, talking about authenticity. And some of the things you said were I think, so valuable for people who look at sales and they think, I don't know if I want to do sales, or I don't want to have to act like this or be this, or will I have to do these things versus this, and kind of that misconception. I love, again, the style flexing and the changing communication, not just mirroring, but just, you know, being a different style of communicator in those moments. In this episode, this conversation, I want to focus on persuasion, which is the act of sales. It's a sales process. To me, it's the intentional act of moving the right people forward to some kind of better place, right? Like with or without your product. When you started out in sales, radio, TV, and you know, and in the low-level sales jobs and moved your way up, what was your sales process focused on? You said that you had a lot of training. They provided a lot of training, which is amazing. I don't hear that very much. What was your process, and or what did you found worked best in those environments?
So I think first and foremost, I had to figure out who I was dealing with, what type of customer I was dealing with. And I think because I was selling to retail businesses to advertise on the radio, they were all so different. Some of them were businesses that had many layers, right? And so I was dealing with a manager, maybe a store manager, or you know, a chain of store manager. And sometimes I was dealing with the man or woman who owned the shop, and it was just that one singular shop, right? And so everybody wanted to be dealt with differently. And I think my process was really all about communicating, right? And asking them how they wanted to be. And I didn't know this in the beginning. I told you, you know, the funny story about the lady who said, I don't want her as my sales rep because I wasn't doing the right thing. So I learned very quickly that I needed to ask people, what do you want from me? Do you want to be seen? Do you want me to come in once a week, once a month? Do you want me to call? Do you want me to email? And so finding that out was really the first step. And then once I found out how they wanted to be interacted with, then I think my general process was, you know, tell me what it is that you want to do with this advertising. What problems do we need to solve, and how can I help you solve them? Most people didn't want that off-the-shelf package, that radio package that we were peddling that month. They wanted me to help them figure out how to sell more of their product or service. And I think understanding that people wanted relationships and that people wanted me to help them solve their problems was really what my process ended up being, that whole idea of consultative selling versus transactional selling, which is how I started. Just kind of saying, hey, you want to buy some radio advertising? You know, we're a great radio station. Look where we rank in Arbitron ratings, which are Nielsen now, but you know, we're like number one in the area and you should really be advertising with us. That never worked. Never worked. So, you know, learning how to find out what problems they had and how I could help them solve them was really my process.
So that transactional, hey, look at us, we're amazing, we have the best ratings in the region kind of sales mode. You said it didn't work. I'm going to guess it didn't work for you. Did it work for anybody? And or loaded question, do you think it ever works?
I think it could work if you're dealing with somebody who isn't invested in the business, right? They can say, "Oh, you know, I have to do so much advertising. I have this much money in my budget, and you know, you're a good station. I'll, you know, throw a couple thousand dollars your way." That happened, and it happened a bunch, but those weren't the clients that I was really concerned with. You know, those were the people that were going to buy from me no matter what. I wanted to get the people who were on the fence, that had interest, but that I couldn't close. Those were the people that I wanted to get on. And you know, we had quotas, and it was no different than it is today. You know, if I didn't sell, I wasn't, you know, gonna get paid. I was complete and utter commission. And you know, it was to the point where if the people that bought the advertising didn't pay, I had to actually go to the business and say, "Hey, can you write me a check? I don't get paid if you don't pay." But anyway, back to my thing. I think it worked, but for the little guy, it didn't work because they would say, "Well, here, I've got this information from your competitor, and they say they're the best." So, you know, so no, it didn't work. What worked for those businesses was for them to say, "Hey, you know, Michelle cares about our business and she's going to help us." And she might not get the sale today, but you know, if she works for it and she helps us solve some problems and then we see results, then you know, she's going to be our girl. And that's how it happened. So yeah, it does work for some businesses, but there's definitely qualifications for why it would work or not work.
It's fascinating because it makes total sense, right? Where someone's not invested in the overall solution, or they, you know, use it or lose it budget, or they're just tasked with, hey, go spend money on, in this case here, advertising, because we know it's done. And then it's essentially a transaction and you're essentially an order taker, which is, okay, how much would you like to buy? What spots? And yeah, that's it, right? And then you're just doing that. And I think of how many people in sales either act like that, right? Which is the main thing that I focus on, is the people who default to that because they don't know better or they think that's what's involved. Or the classic sales model, which is mostly focused on that, which is, you know, all about, I have this amazing thing and I'm just going to go out there and play the numbers game until I find enough people who want my transaction because I'm just going to push that. And you know it, how effective that is and how many people come and go from sales because they think that's the only mode. When you're teaching the classes now and we shift to the students you have, you know, most of the time I know the students from talking to a lot of universities where these students don't necessarily know what professional sales is, right? Like they only know transactional sales and retail and stuff from their life. And so what's that process of helping them learn a sales process? And, you know, how well can you cover that in class and how can you teach it? I know you said you do a lot of role playing versus, you know, the real world.
I always default in my first level, my principal's classes, we use spin selling. I'm sure you know what spin selling is, right? And a lot of, I mean, I think people are kind of split on what they think about spin selling. But spin selling, you know, is definitely a good framework to use for students who, you know, you say, "Okay, here's the scenario. How are you going to sell this person?" And they say, "Well, what questions do I ask?" And that, you know, you ask the right question. Well, they don't know. It's a blank canvas and they're sitting in class and they're like, "What questions do I ask?" So if you give them this spin framework, SPIN is simply, you know, an acronym for situation questions, followed by problem questions, followed by implication, and then need payoff. And so now, and it doesn't have to be exactly in that order, but it's a good idea to start in that order, right? You're new to sales. If I had this, you know, when I was selling, I think I would have been a lot better. You know, the situation questions. So we do a role play in my principal's class. We sell printers. And so the situation question would be, "So tell me about, you know, your current printers. You know, what brand are you using? How old are they?" You know, whatever. Situation questions. And then, so, you know, it sounds like they're pretty old printers. So are you having some problems with the features? Or, you know, are you having some problems printing with the toner, with the whatever? Is it slow? And then implication questions. So, you know, this, you said to your printers are really slow. Is this, know, the implication is this causing a problem with efficiency with your workers, right? And then they say, oh, yeah, you know. So if I could show you, you know, a printer that could, you know, solve those problems, you know, be help your employees be more efficient, you know, is that something that you'd like to see, right? So now all of a sudden you've got a way to get to asking questions, right? Where they can be closed-ended, they can be open-ended, but now you know you need some questions here. You know, tell me about your situation. So have a handful of questions here. Tell me about the problem. Here's the implication. Here's the NAPAM. Now we can start getting into the presentation. They don't know how to get from point A to the presentation, right? How do I get there? So, you know, and then once they get kind of the hang of it, then we kind of abandon that a little bit, but we still use it as a framework and we focus more on the probing, right? Now we've asked about this and they said this. So now don't just ask your next question, probe, right? So you can have a script kind of like what we would maybe have for an interview, right? You can have a script, but you need to be prepared to move off that script, right? If they answer a question this way, then you've got to go that way. And that's the part that takes the most practice and the most teaching and the most critiquing for them to understand that probing. And I say that word in class a trillion times and they get sick of hearing me say it. They, you know, but that's the part I think that's when you have the framework, it makes it easy to teach the parts that become difficult. Following the conversation to get to the heart of the problem.
So for the probing, is there something you teach the students as far as like the end goal, the destination? Like when you know you have done it properly, you can move forward because of X or you know X. I mean, is it all of the spin stuff? Is it the N? Like, again, how would they know to move forward and how would you grade them on successfully finishing the probing section?
So they have to have a problem that they know they can solve with our product, right? And so, you know, part of what we do to prepare for that sale is we research the product and what are the things that we know, what are the features and benefits of the product? Because what we don't want to do is we don't want to push our features and benefits on people. But what we want to do is we want to match up their problems with the features and benefits that we know we have. So sometimes we say, you know, you're going to find out that this particular client doesn't need your product or service, and then you move on. But if they get to a problem that actually is something that you know you can solve, then ding, 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 now you can move on and start to present. And so we kind of work backwards. They have to figure out what are the features and benefits of our product. And what do we know? We know that we have security. We have cloud. We're cloud ready. We have remote ability. We have all these things. And so if we have all these things, then we need to know if they have these problems, right? Because then we can solve them. I mean, that's kind of how we do it. It's obviously a long process and it's a lot of bits. We don't do the whole role play until the end of the semester. We do bits of role plays and we do different scenarios so that they understand it. And we do a lot about the introduction and the rapport building. And they have so much trouble with that rapport building, but I make them do it. And then, you know, how to move on into, you know, asking the right questions to determine the problem and then the presentation. So we kind of do it in bits. And I think it's beneficial because by the end, they get it. They get that they have to know their product to understand if the client needs it or not, and to understand when is the point to move on to presenting. Most of them get it. I mean, I guess there's two that don't.
You said that they have problems with rapport building, or that's one of the things. Tell me what happens and or how do you help them get better at rapport building?
So I think in these artificial venues, right? We're in the classroom and we're not in somebody's office. So typically you'd be able to look around, you know, the office and see, oh, they're an Eagles fan, or oh, they're a Phillies fan, or if you're into sports, or, you know, see a picture on the desk, although you have to be careful about that. And you could start to build the conversation. But I tell students that in any case, you have no idea what you're going to come across. So you need to have things that you can easily talk about, right? It could be something as simple as the weather. It could be, you know, the drive-in. It could be what you researched about their business and what you know about them from LinkedIn. And I saw that you were just promoted, or I saw that your business just recently won an award, you know, for being, you know, so green or whatever. And then you've got something to talk about. So I say, don't ever leave the rapport building to chance. You know, go in there with a strong introduction, a strong handshake, if they are willing to shake your hand, and have something to say. Always have something to say and have it, you know, semi-memorized, right? Because that's what's going to give you that halo effect, that credibility right from the get-go. And so we practice that a lot. They hate it, but we practice it a lot until they're good at it. You know, they don't just say, hey, you know, did you see that basketball game last night? Yeah. Oh, it was good. Then it's over. Okay. Now tell me about your printer. It's like, no, that's not what we do. We have to be able to transition. And so we work at it.
And I think it's always the challenge, especially for new salespeople. And when I'm working with them on the authenticity, they're like, okay, how do I build authentic rapport without it being scripted and staged and planned? And my answer is generally just actually be curious and care about learning about people or asking questions because you actually want to know. I know from being on the receiving side of that, where I can tell when it's like in a sales conversation, someone's trying to sell me in my business. And I know it just feels fake and phony rapport building, right? They're just checking boxes in order to build some rapport. And, you know, they went through my LinkedIn profile and now they're just asking some questions. And is it just a ploy? Are they just going through that stage or do they generally care? Right. Are they curious?
I think that one of the things that we also teach in sales is about listening. And, you know, you have to go in there with something, but, you know, depending on how you answer or how the client answers, you should be able to listen and hear, you know, where that conversation could go. And so much of sales is listening. And we talk about listening. So that's a big part, a big chunk of what we talk about. And I think that's why it's so great that our sales program is communications as well as business. And it's so much more than that. But I think the communications part is so important. And we, like I said, we talk so much about listening because they can miss important things if they're not listening. But I get what you're saying about it could sometimes feel phony, but I think you have to kind of set the stage and get someone at ease before you just go in and say, hey, you want to buy a printer. You have to have something. And it gets easier as you go through sales, right? And doesn't feel so scripted. But I actually, and this is probably something that you're going to hate, but I actually, in those principles classes, I have them write out a script. And they're not allowed to use the script when they do the role play, but it helps them organize their thoughts. What are some questions I want to ask? And it's never, you know, you say, oh, it should be organic, but really life isn't organic. And if we don't know what questions we need to ask, then we're going to get lost, right? If we know the things that we want to ask, we can have it right there with us and we can kind of check them off as we ask and even write down their answers. But they're not allowed to bring a script in. They can bring in a list of questions, but they can't bring the script to the final role play. But I mean, I organize my thoughts that way. I write things down. So I want them to do that. And they're all like, do I have to write a script? And I'm like, no, you don't. If you feel comfortable, not. But writing a script will help you understand the process.
I am pro script. So I'm even more pro script of like, you should write it and then you should potentially read it, especially unless somebody can tell that you're reading it, even if, you know, whatever, it's like to keep you on focus and on task. And something should be very scripted and either memorized or read, which is a whole different conversation. But I am super pro script, especially when it comes to like what you're saying is the question, not scripting the rapport, because that would be weird.
Right, yeah,
but even then, like what questions are you going to ask from the rapport research that you did? That's good. And then also your actual probing discovery questions. Yeah, write those out. Because again, like you said, don't ever leave rapport building to chance. Don't leave probing question asking to chance unless you've done it for a really long time and you have so much confidence in industry knowledge that you know where you want to go and you don't need a list to help you get there. And even with that, I would say still you should always have it scripted and listed out, because otherwise you're going to go off on tangents or skip things.
Well, the nice thing is when we're face to face, you know, we can have our portfolio or a padfolio, whatever you want to call it. And we, you know, people expect, you know, when I'm asking you questions that I need the answer to, I'm not going to memorize all that stuff. They expect you to write it down. And so, you know, it's nice to be able to have that. And of course you want visuals and documentation, things to hand out, leave behind as well. So it can be all right there, right by your side.
And the best analogy and the example I can use in that, if for people who might be disagreeing or wanting to you know, to say otherwise, is when you go to the doctor, do you want your doctor like following a process and like having something they're filling out and then writing in the results or what you're saying about that? Or do you want them just winging it and hopefully memorizing and remembering everything from you, patient number 86 that day, and hopefully then giving you the right diagnosis and the right prescription? Like, which one would you prefer? Again, sales could be the same way. And right. Some people just wing it and then you get what you get.
That's right.
So when we talk about sales process, what do you think buyers want, right? Not just how you're helping the sellers and giving them some kind of framework, but what do buyers want from a salesperson?
Well, I think buyers want to be listened to, and I think buyers want to know that you want to help them and that you're not just peddling a product or peddling a service. They want to know that you genuinely want to help them. And I think if they feel that way, then they're open to listening. It doesn't mean they're necessarily going to buy, but they're open to listening. You know, we talk a lot about different kind of celebrities in sales, and Zig Ziglar is one of them. And he talks a lot about, well, I mean, he talked a lot about how, you know, people want to talk about themselves, right? And you need to let them talk about themselves and what they want. Instead of saying, this is what we can do for you, this is what we can do for you, you want to find out what they need. And if you can get a buyer to talk about themselves and their problems and what they need, then the chances of you getting to the part where you can close them is much greater. And that's why that listening is so important. So I think buyers want to be listened to, and they want to know that you definitely want to help them solve a problem, not just make a sale that day. And I don't think that'll ever change.
No. And why do you think people don't buy, especially if they have an issue that there is a, you know, potential solution for?
Well, I mean, I think a lot of it has to do with trust, right? If they trust you, then they're more likely to end up being with you. And there's lots of ways that you can lose trust, right? You know, you leave a sales call, you have this wonderful sales call, and someone is almost ready to buy. And you say, okay, well, you know, you wanted that thing that I don't have, and I'm going to follow up. And then you never follow up. Or say, I'm going to get back to the office and follow up. And 2 days later, you remember and you follow up. I mean, you've already lost trust. And I think that's, we talked about professionalism earlier. You know, that's part of that professionalism that can make or break salespeople. And if you say you're going to do something, you have to do it. So yeah, if I have a choice, if I'm a buyer and I have a choice between someone I can trust and someone that I don't know if I can trust, comparable products, I'm always going to go with the person I can trust.
And especially in a world where the buyer isn't desperately needing it or wanting it, right? If they're just like, I have this problem, I need this, they will tolerate some level of unprofessional, you know, bad salesperson, right? But generally, that's not the case. And there's usually competition from the buyer side. Again, like you said, there's multiple choices, no matter how special you think you are as a salesperson and your company thinks, there's always choices. And people will decide based on who they want to work with. Final thoughts on the persuasion sales process piece before we finish out this episode?
I mean, I think that, you know, when we're talking about selling, I think the thing that I try to teach my students is you have to really be a good listener. You have to know your product, but you have to be a good listener. And I think the best way to persuade someone is to understand what their problem is and then be able to solve that problem with what it is that you're selling. If you don't know what their problem is, if you've not heard them, then there's no way that you can persuade them. So for me, I think the key is listening.
I love it. And I think that's just fundamentally a good lesson in general. And I love what you said. Like, if you want to persuade somebody, you have to understand what their problem is, or what their goals are, or what their hopes are, or where they want to be instead of where they are, and then see if you can help them. The only way to do that is to listen instead of assuming everyone should want to buy your product, right? Kind of like going back to your advertising sales days, right? Just assuming because you have these Nielsen ratings and whatever you refer to it, the previous mode is like, because we have this, you should want this, right? Instead of like, what do you want? And then let me see how I can help you. And I think that's a huge shift for a lot of people in sales. All right. So thank you for being here. For people who want to connect with you, they can do so on LinkedIn. So like I mentioned, the first part, it's going to be in the show notes. So Michelle Welliver, Welliver, on LinkedIn, and also the Susquehanna University website, which is actually pretty easy compared to how you spell the name, susqu.edu. It will also be in the show notes. Make sure to check that out, especially if you're you want to be involved from a corporate partner level, students, future students, be a part of that program. And Dr. Michelle, thank you for being here, talking about the persuasion piece. I love kind of where we went with all of this. And I'm super excited for our part three, where we're going to talk about the future of sales. So thank you for being here and sharing all this info. And until next time, thank you for helping fill the world with authentic persuaders.